Hey, we're back here on Downtown Wednesday afternoon. It's time for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101 as Bruce Pratt joins us in studio. And what are we talking about? Clubbies? Is that the book for this week?
The book is called Clubbies by a guy named Greg Larson, who is a writer and a stand-up comedian, but who spent 2 years as a clubhouse manager for the Aberdeen Ironbirds in the A-League. And he had always wanted to be a baseball player, and Dad got him out there when he was a little kid, and he did all the things you do. He got to a Division III school. He was a walk-on there. He didn't play much, and he transferred to Winthrop University, where he became the manager of the baseball team as a way to stay in baseball. So when this clubhouse job came up, he applied for it, and he got it, and he thought it would be his entree, if you will, into the world of professional baseball and baseball players. But he soon found out that the clubhouse manager's job is a little bit different. And as Ron Bloomberg said to us earlier, you know, the spread has a lot to do with it. What happens at this level is these players make about $8,000 per season. They do not get paid any off season. They don't get housing. Some people are able to bunk with, you know, the way that hockey does it with billeting families. You get to stay with a family. But in this case, some of them will be like five people to an apartment sleeping on air mattresses. The second year, Greg Larson is sleeping in the clubhouse because he figured out that was an easier way to save some money. Now, it's also the story of Greg Larson's personal life at the time. He's got a girlfriend named Nicole. She's a teacher. He's going to be away from her for all that part of the season. So he injects his own story and his own evolution as a person into a story which is really in some ways shocking. First of all, the Aberdeen Ironbirds are never any good. They just haven't had a lot of success. Their owner is Cal Ripken Jr., who obviously, as the Ironbirds are in the Orioles system, is a big part of what goes on. So what Larson finds out is that, you know, in the minor leagues, sort of, and it's reminded me a little bit of like the Southern Professional Hockey League, players will get into scraps and fights with one another. There are racial issues. There are music in the clubhouse issues, all the kinds of things that you think by the time they get into pro ball might have changed. But also, he becomes responsible for making his own money, in a sense. And he charges the players $7 a day. And that provides food before and after the game. Okay, and this is like Yossarian and Catch-22. This is like Radar on MASH. Guys working deals to get free beer in exchange for this, to get free food in exchange for this, finding out that the stadium crew sometimes dumps really usable food, and he starts wheeling and dealing. And then he realizes that when he does that, he's not becoming part of the brotherhood. He's becoming part of the management. And then he has all of his problems with management, too, because they want this to happen. They want that to happen. They just say, make it happen. You're the clubhouse manager. He's in charge of uniforms. He's in charge of bats. He finds guys that actually haven't broken bats. He can make money with cracked bats because he gets players to sign them. Oh. He gets $20 for them to be sold up in the thing. So which players' bats are going to sell more than others? That's who you have sign the bat, right? Whether that's right. The bat they broke or not.
They cracked it.
Whether they cracked it or not. There are some hilarious moments in here. And there's also some moments of great sadness. But what I think was most interesting is, you know, we tend to have a glamorous idea of the mindset of the minor leaguer, right? That the kid that's going to make it, right? You build it, they will come, right? And a lot of these kids are signed out of high school, and they're really just signed as cannon fodder. They just need players.
Right.
And the hope is that, you know, one of them's going to break through at some time. And as we know, the percentage of people that are ever going to step onto a major league baseball field is minuscule. I don't even know what it is. Are there 500 jobs in baseball or something like that? Many fewer than in football, because you get 53 people on one roster, you get 25 on another. The interesting thing, though, too, is how the people who manage and coach at this level, they're on the same program. They're wanting to move up.
Or they're guys who have been there.
Yeah.
And are working their way down.
Working their way down.
Hoping to catch a break and get back.
Yeah. Now, for instance, one of the guys in this book, we were unable, unfortunately, he we were going to try and get my friend Roland Marullo's great uncle, who was the last surviving member of the Cubs, 1941 World Series team. And unfortunately, he passed away. Well, he's mentioned in the book because his grandson...
Was that Lenny?
Yeah, Lenny Marullo. This is his grandson, Matt, is one of the coaches with this team. You see this tie to history of these guys, that the pedigree of players that whose parents or grandparents were at some point in Major League. They may not all have all been Lenny Marullos, right? But they were people that played, and that sort of connection, the ability to know that you might be playing in Lincoln, Nebraska one day, and then you get optioned to Delmarva the next day, and you could be in the Texas League a week after, is one thing. But the grind of the travel is unbelievable.
Bus rides and sharing hotel rooms.
Yeah, and you finish a doubleheader in Staten Island at 8 o'clock at night. By 9 o'clock, you're on the bus, having maybe showered, maybe not, gulped down some food. And then you drive 4 hours back. It's now 1 o'clock in the morning. Everybody has to help with the unloading. The clubhouse guy then has to start washing the uniforms for the next day and starts getting the food ready and laying everything out. I mean, there is absolutely no glamour to this. None, except that beautiful afternoon or evening when you go 3 for 4 with, you know, and make a dazzling play.
Well, it's like being a musician.
Yeah.
You know, they pay you to ride on the bus and stay in the motel. The treat is to be on stage with the guitar.
Absolutely. And I was thinking about some of the road trips they took and knowing those areas well and having driven them late at night when I was playing music. And I was thinking particularly of a time when I had to drive from Connecticut to Frederick, Maryland and back. In one day, I play a gig in the middle of it.
That's the gig you forgot you
right,
had.
Right, I forgot I had, yeah. I thought about these guys. They would occasionally have one of those out and back kind of trips. And then they're sleeping on air mattresses. They're living on food they scrounge. A lot of the players, especially those from the Dominican, this is real money to them, right? And so they're living, you know, as many as they can to a room, eating as cheaply as they can, doing everything they can to hoard this little sum of money that to the rest of us wouldn't mean much. And the funny thing is, because he does it for 2 years, if he'd have done it for 1 year, it would have been like this lark. But he consciously goes back, and in between, he doesn't really look for work. He's not really, because he's flush with cash. He's made so much much money. Finally, he does. As we'll learn, and the thing is, I'm not giving a lot of details because I wouldn't want to tip this away. But some of the people that love this book were Brad Baluchian, who we love,
the Wax Pack,
Michael Pearson from the New York Times, and others. And it's a relatively new book. It just came out this year from Nebraska, but he really gets into the mindset of what happens when you want to be part of the fraternity, you want to be part of the club, whatever. You get your foot in the door, and you realize you're really two clubs, and you only be part of one of them.
Yeah.
And that can be, you know, that can be a really tough decision. I used to face that because not only did I play music for a living, but I did book a concert series and a festival every year. And there were people all the time would say, hey, look, you know, you want to play at this place? You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And I go, no, it doesn't work that way. I can't do that, right? And so there were lots of places where, oh, he belongs. He's a musician. He's not with us. He's not on that side of the bench. And it also is interesting how so much of what goes on in these small stadiums is in a sense series of little fiefdoms, you know. There's there's the restaurant and concession guys. There's the guys who sell the merchandise. There's the clubhouse guys. They're the grounds crew people, and it's not one big happy family. and it was really eye opening because I thought to myself, what a great job, be the clubhouse manager for a minor league team, get to watch a lot of ball games, and I thought, man, you couldn't have enough money to make me do it. The guy made good money. I bet he made $25,000 in 2 months, but no, I wouldn't work that hard for anything other than to save somebody's life.
And I'm guessing his story is not all that unique.
No, and it's interesting because, you know, how Bloomberg was saying, you know, one clubhouse manager is different than another clubhouse manager. And this, that. You forget that the clubhouse manager is responsible for the other team's stuff. So if they're there for 3 days, you're doing their laundry.
Right.
And you're set and getting their meals set up and you're doing all that. And players generally would tip some. But as it gets later in the season, they're trying to save their money. The tips get smaller. If the coaches don't get to the spread on time, they're left out. They have to go out for dinner. They're mad at you. It was really, really interesting because I think what Brad Belusian said, I really like this line. He said, "With an excellent eye for detail, Greg Larson captures every tobacco stain and dirty sock in this memoir of life as the clubhouse attendant. It's well-written, heartfelt chronicle of growing up in a game that doesn't want to." And it's how baseball doesn't change, really, in so many ways. I mean, yeah, you know, the stupid extra inning rule and the designated hitter and all that. But that whole process of getting to the bigs, if you were a bonus baby and you want new bats, you got them, right? If you were signed for $5,000 out of high school with some hope that you might play, it's like, kid, I don't know, buy your own bats. It's interesting. A real eye opener. Really, really good book.
All right, the book is called Clubbies, and again, it's by
Clubby by Greg Larson, a minor league baseball memoir from University of Nebraska Press. And I've just gotten a horde of good books in. I'm reading a book on Tony Lazzari that's out of this world, just got Gibson Faye LeBlanc, the Portland Poets, Deke Dangle and Dive, hockey and the death of his brother and playing through all that and things together. So. A lot of good stuff coming up.
Thanks. And next week on Sports Lit, we'll talk with Tim Wendell about his book, Escape from Castro's Cuba.
Yes, and they're going to send us the prequel to that so we can look at that. And he's one of the founders of Baseball Today writers. So.
Excellent. Good stuff. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, Rich.
We'll see you next week.
You bet.